Golf Today on a Wednesday. David Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. Don't let anyone tell you golf season is over yet. I played golf yesterday. Bonnie Brier Country Club, Westchester County. Lloyd Robinson, 35-year member, took me out. Talk about a Chamber of Commerce day. It was gorgeous, my friend.
Give me a number. I'm not interested in the temperature. Give me the number that matters.
Started out rough, 6-7, as the kids say. Ended with a 90.
As the great Peter Alice used to say, that sounds like the dialing code for Tierra del Fuego on your scorecard.
It was. It was a big number. Too many big numbers, but it was a lot of fun. I love fall golf. Let's talk about the pros for a moment and kick things off with a check on this week's PGA Tour stop. The Bank of Utah Championship, Black Desert Resort, Ivins, Utah last year. Remember Matt McCarty? Won in just his third career PGA Tour start, his second as a tour member, and with the win became the second player to win on the PGA Tour in the same season after earning the Korn Ferry Tour's 3-victory promotion.
And this week, the tour is back at Black Desert Resort for the second playing of the Bank of Utah Championship. It's the fourth event of the FedEx Cup Fall. This is, of course, a series of seven tournaments played after the Tour Championship that finalizes eligibility for the 2026 PGA Tour season. And right now, we say hello to Todd Lewis, who's on site for us at this week's PGA Tour stop in Utah. Todd, I know we're winding down the 2025 season, but some guys are already starting to wonder what the start of 2026 is going to look like. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, not only players, but also us media members, us fans. Where will the season start in 2026? Of course, traditionally, it has started on the island of Maui at Kapalua, the century where tournament winners from the previous year and those who have qualified by making it to the BMW Championship get spots in that tournament. But last month, if you remember, the PGA Tour announced because of drought conditions that the century would not take place at Kapalua. Now, Maverick McNealy played in the century this year. He's in the field here in Utah and he's eligible to play next year. I caught up with Mav and I asked him how disappointed he is in the fact that he will not start 2026 on the beautiful island of Maui.
Really bummed. I mean, Maui is always the place you want to start the year. It's something you circle on your schedule. And as a tour player, to play a tournament of champions with top 50 players, and it's just such a fun tournament. So, you know, sitting and dining with the windows open, looking at the ocean, it's a really fun week. So really sad we're not going to get to go back this year.
So the question is, where will Maverick McNealy and roughly 60 other players start 2026? The PGA Tour has been investigating, trying to find a place to replace the Kapalua Plantation course, but it's a very big challenge because we're talking about January, and if you're not going to be in Hawaii, finding a place on the mainland because of the weather conditions and the season is going to be really, really hard. Secondly, the fact that you're going to have such an elite field, if you have an event on the mainland, you're going to have a pretty big build out. So the question is for the PGA Tour and all of us is, will the century happen in 2026? Will it be canceled? And if that happens, then that will really cause a lot of chaos and confusion for the players who are eligible. For instance, there are seven players in the field here in Utah that are tournament winners from 2025. And you take a look at those players. Now, two of those players, Kurt Kitayama and Ryan Girard, they made it to the BMW Championship. They finished inside the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings, so they are eligible for all the signature events. Those other five players that you see there, they did not make it to the BMW Championship, so this, technically, as of now, would be the only signature start this century. And if that goes away, that could bring a lot of confusion for those players. What will the tour do if indeed they do cancel the century? Will they give those players a spot in another signature event in 2026? And if so, which ones? Now, it's doubtful they would give them a spot in the Arnold Palmer Invitational, in the Memorial, in the Genesis, because those are three of the elite signature events. They're called legacy events. So I would guess, and again, these are hypotheticals, they would probably give a spot to those players at Hilton Head for the RBC Heritage, maybe the Travelers, some tournament like that on the Signature Series. But the question is, will the century happen in 2026? I expect the PGA Tour to announce maybe this week, maybe as early as today, as to what the future looks like for the century in 2026 and maybe beyond, guys.
Some exciting news to share on this Wednesday. Big Break, which ran on Golf Channel for a record-breaking 23 seasons. My wife loves this program, by the way. It's returning next year. Season 24, Big Break, Good Good, will premiere on Golf Channel in August of next year. It will take place at Horseshoe Bay Resort in Texas. Now, how about this? The winner will receive an exemption into the PGA Tour's Good Good Championship in November of next year. And you remember, Eamon, Big Break, it pits highly skilled golfers against each other in a number of skills challenges, from the tee to the green. You got those two signature challenges, the popular glass break. You got the flop wall challenges. Those will both return as well. Now, how about the Big Break Dominican Republic winner, former LPGA Tour pro and Golf Channel personality? There she is, Blair O'Neill. Will serve as host of Big Break Good Good. She competed twice on Big Break. She joins us now, got the trophy beside her. Blair, it's great to see you. This show has such a great lineage with this channel. What are you most excited about?
Well, I gotta tell you, when I got the call, Big Break was coming back, it was like, finally! We've been waiting years for this to come back. And it's obviously a very successful show, and everyone loves it, and it's my most the question I get the most is, when is Big Break coming back and is it coming back? So I was so excited when I heard that it was coming back, and of course that I'm hosting it. I think it's a great fit, and joining with, you know, Good Good, we've got two powerhouses here, Big Break and Good Good, and so it's just a really powerful combination. I'm so excited, and I think everyone else is going to be really excited too.
Blair, why do you think this show had such appeal to recreational golfers over the years? What was it that drew folks into this?
I think the viewers can relate to the players, and I gotta tell you, being a contestant on the show, there's absolutely nothing like it. The feeling of being on the show cannot be replicated in any way. It's so unique, but I think the biggest thing is that the contestants on the show, they really want to take it to the next level, and that's what makes the show different. These are players who give their life and their soul and blood, sweat, and tears to this game, and the show is so life-changing. It absolutely changed my life, and I think a lot of the other contestants on the show would say the same thing. So that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to, is seeing like whose life is this going to change next, because it absolutely will. It's just an opportunity. There's just nothing like that, and it puts you in positions that you would never think of and puts you in places that you never imagine.
Yeah, that's an element of it that's somewhat underplayed, at least for us as viewers. You know, for us, it's pure entertainment. For the folks who are there, it's an opportunity, and some people have actually built that opportunity into a career in the professional ranks. How important is that to the competitors, the idea of what they can build on it after the season is actually concluded?
Well, I mean, I think the players that are coming on the show, that's their everything. And I think that's why the viewers at home can relate to that, because they can feel that passion, and you can see that passion, and you feel the competitiveness between the players. And when you're on that show, it feels like everything is on the line. It really is make or break. You need to hit that shot. If you don't, you're gone. And so there's just so much pressure in it. And I think you, as the viewer, you see all the emotions that come out from it as well, because everyone is so competitive on the show, and what they can take away from the show with, you know, with this new Big Break coming up. You know, the winner's going to win an exemption into the Good Good Championship in 2026, which is huge. Like, what an amazing opportunity. And that can, like I said, it can change their life.
Yeah, we just saw highlights of Tony Finau. His brother Gipper competed on Big Break as well. I'm curious about the addition of Good Good to this franchise. They are social media savvy. The kids love them. How impactful do you think Good Good will be with Big Break?
Like I said, I think these are two powerhouses coming together, because think about this. Big Break, you know, came out in 23 years ago, I believe. And at that time, Big Break was the golf entertainment. If you weren't watching professional golf, this is what you watched as well. You know, you watched Big Break and you grew to know these contestants and follow these contestants and love them. And it was the golf entertainment world at that time. And now, this day and age, you know, Good Good has done just that as well. I mean, they've been amazing in their space. And the following they have is incredible. And I first got introduced to them about a year and a half ago. I did some on-course commentating for their Desert Open here in Arizona. And I tell you what, the people that come out and the kids that come out to watch these events, I saw, had never seen anything like it. And, you know, this was before I had my own show, Glam Golf, you know, on YouTube and on Golf Pass, and really got into the YouTube world. And I was like, wow, there is a whole nother golf world out there. These young players that, you know, maybe like to watch a little bit different type of golf, but it's golf nonetheless. And just, this is really absolutely going to grow the game, and the fans that Good has and the fans that Big Break has, we're going to have viewers from over 20 years ago watching this, you know, new show in 2026. And then we're going to have, you know, younger kids who've never seen the show, and they're just absolutely going to love it. So it's really, you know, bringing the golf world together, and it's going to be something special.
From a competitor standpoint, Blair, what's the toughest of the challenges that are so familiar on this show? I mean, Damon doesn't get worried about breaking panes of glass. He does that almost every round of golf he plays. It's got to be the flop shot wall, right?
Oh, the flop shot wall is a very good one. So those are my two favorite, actually. Funny that you mentioned that. Breaking the glass, there's nothing like the sound of breaking glass. I don't know, it's just invigorating. And then the flop shot wall, that one is so intense. But I think it's just, I can't explain to you how your heart beat. Your heart is just beating out of your chest over those shots. And you're just trying to calm yourself down because you know you have one chance to do this. And it's nerve-wracking. It's intense, guys.
Well, I have broken glass. Fourth hole, Winter Park 9, the house to the right of the fairway. Blair, we are so excited. Can't wait to see you next year. I'm a huge Big Break fan. My wife is as well. And, Amy, we're going to get you on board, too. Thanks so much, Blair.
Thank you, guys. And all the shows are streaming right now on Golf Pass, so all the old Big Breaks. So go check them all out.
I was about to tell the good folks it's a Big Break marathon. My wife's going to be watching this all day. And you can catch your favorite seasons, including Dominican Republic, won by Blair on Golf Pass.
Oh, this whole
There's
thing.
The trophy. There it is. She's got the hardware to prove it.
Thank you, guys.
See ya.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Just been a few weeks since this moment. Shane Lowry sinking that putt at Bethpage Black to seal the Ryder Cup victory for the European squad, captained by Luke Donald. 15-13 victory in the 45th Ryder Cup. The first win on foreign soil since the miracle at Medina 13 years earlier.
Eamon, we were both there. You may recall that the U.S. was captained by Keegan Bradley, who made the tough call in August not to be a playing captain. I watched him, he was pacing left and right across greens, nervous as cat on a tin roof. I'll tell you what, he took the blame for some of the mistakes made in the defeat, including the course setup. On Monday at the Travelers Championship Media Day, made his first public comments since the Ryder Cup defeat. Here's some of what he had to say. You win, it's glory for a lifetime. You lose, it's I'm going to have to sit with this for the rest of my life. There's no part of me that thinks I'll ever get over this. Since the Ryder Cup to now has been one of the toughest times in my life. I really would enjoy playing in one more. I don't know if I'll get the chance. This effing event has been so brutal to me. I don't know if I want to play. No, I do. It's such a weird thing to love something so much that just doesn't give you anything. Wow. With reaction, we bring in Golf Channel senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, I'm going to start with you. You know, in good times, Keegan is just fiery, but he can be a dark, dark dude. Your thoughts on his reaction?
That sounds so tortured. You have to feel so bad for him when you think of everything that he had to go through for this entire process. And we can sit and pick apart whether or not the PGA of America made the right decision on this, but he was in an impossible position as a player and a captain. He had to essentially pass over himself, and I would argue one of the top 12 Americans, because he knew he couldn't do both jobs. And then you show up, I have no doubt that he poured every ounce of energy into this. He poured every ounce of his soul into this, and he knew what he was getting involved with. We've heard captains say it a lot of different ways. In victory, it's always fun. Defeat, you're always going to be the one that gets blamed. I don't know that I've ever seen someone say it with such emotion. And I've never seen someone say it with that much hurt in their voice. You can tell that what happened at Bethpage is going to stay with Keegan for a really long time.
Brian, there was a sense that Keegan's captaincy was born out of that Netflix episode where he was shown disappointed at not being chosen for the 2023 team in Rome. Is this all setting up too easily for the next Netflix episode where suddenly Keegan's shot at redemption in Ireland 2 years from now?
I mean, to be fair, that would be a pretty compelling episode, would it not? If to see the sort of anguish which Keegan Bradley was outlining during that media day for this Travelers Championship. And look, I think Rex is exactly right, that this like underscores exactly what the modern Ryder Cup is, where if you win, you are feted like a king and you can be treated like Luke Donald. And if you lose, you are going to be scapegoated and you're going to be remembered like a Hal Sutton or a Davis Love III, two other U.S. captains who lost at home. I do think it sets up a potentially interesting scenario, because I had a lot of conversations with Paul McGinley leading up to this this past Ryder Cup about what was giving him the most confidence about this European team. And he was very clear that one of them was reinstalling the captain in Luke Donald. Sure, Luke Donald was a Vittoria captain in Rome. I think that made that decision a little bit easier, but he was adamant that the consistency and the continuity of bringing a captain, not just for a two-year term, but a four-year team, was crucial to his success. I'll be very curious to see, even though it's very heartbreaking right now for Keegan Bradley, if that is ultimately the decision and the decision makers at the PGA of America decide on.
Lav, I'm going right back to you. Should he get the job again, or is it just going to be another 2 years of, oh, he's playing well? Oh, he won the Travelers. Should he play? Should he captain? It was going to be the same thing over again.
So I think if it didn't necessarily go down the way it went down at Bethpage, it would be an easier decision. I think the cons to him potentially doing that for a second term are pretty obvious. Keegan Bradley admittedly made some mistakes with the setup as well as some of his pairings. And so I don't think there's a whole lot of confidence that he would potentially put the right team around him to have a successful go round. But going back to that conversation with Paul McGinley, one was reinstalling the captain. Two, I do think are options that the Team USA could pull these levers, whether it's tweaking the automatic qualifying system and also just the point system in general to skew towards experienced players and trying to weed out rookies, knowing that first-timers and rookies on the road make things a little bit more difficult. Also, the scouting trip in advance of an away Ryder Cup. I think the Team USA could successfully implement those two pretty easily. I think that the big decision is, if not Keegan, then who? Tiger Woods passed it up this past time. I don't think there's any other obvious solution. So if Keegan Bradley's up for it, which I don't know that he is, it certainly sounds like he's being tortured at the moment, and another opportunity at Ryder Cup may actually be the end of him. But if he can get behind it, I do think there are some I do think there are some systemic reasons why he could do it.
Now, you went really well going over the cons of Keegan doing it again. Personally, being right at the front of the gate, I would argue that why would he want to put himself through this for another 2 years, given the idea that no one has won over there, at least for the U.S., in generations? So the idea that you think you can do something that hasn't been done in a generation of golfers is odd. I don't see any pros to this, and this is not me picking on Keegan Bradley as a captain. I respect him as a captain. I think if there is a golf god that has any feelings, they'll allow him to somehow play his way onto that team in 2 years. That's what I would rather see, more so than him being a captain, simply because of everything that he's wearing now. He admitted openly he got the golf course set up wrong. He admitted openly that maybe some of his pairings he stuck with, and when he got punched in the mouth on day one, he didn't make any adjustments. He has admitted all of these mistakes. I want him to be part of the process. I think the U.S. would do well to listen to these things that he did poorly and maybe make adjustments, but I don't see any pro for him being captain again.
Rex, a couple of days ago, the tour announced the Good Good Championship, which will be held next year, and the reaction in some quarters of golf was kind of what you'd expect. You would think that the tour was partnering with the worst elements of the crowd at Bethpage. Is this always going to be a thing in this game, where anything that's new or slightly fresh or innovative is going to have some kind of dusty old fogies having a panic attack?
I don't see those two things. I think this might be some pearl clutching. I don't see what happened at Bethpage coinciding with Good Good at all. I think this is a move by the tour to try to introduce things to a younger audience. We have seen throughout the course of the last 2 years, really, how they're doing Wednesday tournaments at the Tour Championship, trying to bring influencers to the show. I have had this conversation with our colleague Todd Lewis on multiple occasions. Those events aren't for me or you or people of our age, but they're certainly for people of my son's age who are curious, who would much rather me try to go get Fat Perez's autograph more so than Scottie Scheffler's autograph. So I see what the tour is doing here. I'm a little curious about expanding the fall, because it seems to me that's kind of counterintuitive to what Brian Rolup, the new CEO, wants to do, but I understand where they're going.
Well, Rex, your kids' age are closer in age to Lav. So, Lav, I want to ask you about the significance, the impact of Good Good, both now with Big Break and with a PGA Tour event. Is this a necessary step for the PGA Tour to get younger, to get hipper, to get more modern?
saying hip, Damon, is certainly not going to lend you any sort of credence among the younger audience. I will say, though, it's pretty obvious what the PGA Tour has been trying to do over these past couple of years. And look, it's hard to blame them. You look at Full Swing. We just talked about with Keegan Bradley in the episode, which is clearly going to air for in early 2026. Younger kids are on Netflix. So bring the PGA Tour product to them on Netflix. We've seen that with the Creator Classic and having some of those events leading into the signature events, basically trying to show that these are the best YouTubers that we can showcase. How do they perform at a PGA Tour venue ahead of a PGA Tour venue? Having a signature event, these are the toughest conditions that you're possibly going to face in the PGA Tour. How do they stack up? By extension, that then makes the PGA Tour players look even better. And now I think you see with a good partnership here, collaborating with YouTubers in general, the only way to expand the PGA Tour reach, there's two ways: going more global, going more international, and also being more inclusive. I think it's a necessary step. I think it's a good step for the PGA Tour.
Guys, it's always good to catch up with you, and I'm glad everyone got the memo to wear blue today, although Lav doesn't actually know that because he's colorblind. He thinks he's wearing gray, but it's actually blue, Lav. Thanks for the time, guys.
Close enough.
Five of the top 10 players in the official World Golf Ranking are in the field this week. One of them is world number 42, Jason Day, making his first PGA Tour start since the BMW Championship back in August. Highlights of his 2025 season include four top 10s in 13 cuts made. Here's Jason with Todd Lewis.
We haven't seen Jason compete on the PGA Tour since the BMW Championship. So what have you been doing with your time?
How long is that? A couple months?
Yeah, at least.
So I've been testing new clubs. Actually, that's kind of why I'm here this week, is to test some new clubs out, see how they go, kind of refine them if I need to. Just catching up on family time. The season's busy, and to be able to take some time off and spend time with the family, it's kind of nice because they don't really see me much when the season's on. So,
what does that do for your spirit to get connected with your family again?
Well, I can finally be a dad again, which is one of the most important things. So obviously they travel with me as well. We homeschool and we travel on the road. We're in a bus together, so it's nice to have them on the road with me, but I don't get to be dad the whole year round just because of the season. So I'm very fortunate in this sport that we can take my family. So but to be able to have some time off, you know, we did some filming for the YouTube stuff for the lads and all that, but to be honest, it's been nice to have some time off, so I'm looking forward to a good week here.
I know this is your first start here in Utah, and from what you have seen of this golf course, what are your impressions?
Say out of the lava rock. From what I understand, I think there was like 200 unplayable rulings here last year, which is quite a lot. And once you go into the black stuff, it's difficult to try and get your golf ball back out. It kind of swallows it all up, and you can't go in there and try and retrieve it just because, you know, there's no way of hitting it out of there. So the golf course itself is beautiful. The landscape around here is amazing. This is the first time I've been to Utah State, so I'm very excited to be here. And from what I understand about the golf course, it's quite long. But the way that the golf course plays, where it's like kind of positioned, I think things start to roll out a lot on the fairways, and obviously the greens are firm and fast. So it's going to be interesting. For some reason, I just can't think that they shot 23 under here last year or whatever it was. So it's. I mean, obviously Matt played wonderful golf.
Final thing, we're making the turn to the calendar. As you look back at 25, how would you describe the season you've had, and what are you looking forward to in 26?
Some ups and downs. Obviously, the body hasn't been, you know, I guess, great for me this year, but I think I've had a lot of good finishes regardless. You know, I think if I can just get a handle on that, I feel like I'll be very competitive, you know, coming into next year. So I'm very optimistic about getting some more time off after this, working on the body, and then, you know, try and hit 2026, you know, in full stride, which would be nice.
Wish you the best this week. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
Former world number one with our Todd Lewis, we head over to the CDW Intelligence Center and go beyond the scorecard using ShotLink statistics. So I know you've dug into the numbers comparing peak Jason Day to the Jason Day of today.
Yeah, and Jason Day's peak was really exceptional. If you go back and look at 2015, 2016 and Jason Day, and you look at his top performance statistics, on the PGA Tour. This was his most productive period. He was number one in the world for great periods of these couple of years. 8 of his 13 PGA Tour wins came in this window, and you can see he was a pretty elite ball striker. Look at that bottom total there. In strokes gained total, he was third in 2015 when he won the PGA Championship. 2016, he's first and an elite level putter, but also an elite level ball striker. Flash forward a couple of years to 2018. Now, he was good enough to win twice on the PGA Tour that year, but you can see that the deterioration had set in terms of his ball striking on and around the greens. Jason Day was still very much an elite level player. The issues now, he referenced his body kind of breaking down some over the years. You look at where he is now in 2025, and it reflects a lack of confidence and it reflects a lack of success as well. He hasn't won since the Byron Nelson back in 2023. He's actually only had that one win in the last 7 years on the PGA Tour. And what you can see is the ball striking isn't there. In fact, he hasn't been better, Damon, than 110th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained approach, something he used to excel at since 2016.
Yeah.
So the ball striking isn't there, and there's that little bit of deterioration as well on and around the greens. And a lot of that can be confidence. He doesn't have a lot of reason to be confident these days.
The good news for Jason, and he spoke during the playoffs about it, he's not unaware that he's struggling. That's what he had to say. I've been trying to find my game, to be honest. I haven't been happy with my hitting. I haven't been happy with my short game. It's been scratchy at best. He said my putting has been scratchy. The only thing that's been showing a little bit of form has been his driving. I've had these moments in my career where I've been dialed in like Rory has been for his entire career, like Scottie Scheffler is now, Jason said. He said, it's been a long time for me. I have to review. I need to see where I can improve and start over again. The question I have is at age of 37, with the injury history that he has, can he reboot and get back to where he wants to be?
You make 37 sound as though he's ancient, because he's only 1 year older than Rory McIlroy, and he's
the
Masters champion at this point.
But the injuries probably have him as 47 as opposed to 37.
And he just referenced there to Todd, he's got a pretty full schedule as well. It's not just the fact that he's got a large family to take care of that travel with him, but he's also gotten into the kind of the YouTube influencer world with some of those guys as well, which is also a drain on the time. It might be fun, it might re-energize his love of the game, but it is still a time commitment when he's actually playing the part of a golf pro for content rather than actually doing the work of a golf pro.
We'll see if he can find it in his late 30s. That was the CDW Intelligence Center. People who get it.
Well, we enjoy our next guest because he talks the talk, but he's got a tournament going on this week that shows that he walks the walk too. Billy Horschel, on his comeback from injury, is joining us from Utah right after this short break. Billy joins us now from Utah. Billy, before we get to the PGA Tour event or even your current health status, I want to ask you about the APGA event. What's the motivation for you to get involved to that extent? Because it would be easy to just kind of lend your name and move on, but that's not actually what you do with this event.
No, I try to try to help the guys out as much as I can. I try to give them the knowledge I've learned over the 16 years I've been on the PGA Tour. I want these guys to be successful in the game of golf. I want to give them the opportunity to chase a dream of playing the PGA Tour. I also want to give them the opportunity that if that dream doesn't ultimately pan out, that they've connected with people in the business world that can help them set up the next set, next path in life. And so I've enjoyed being around these guys for 5 years. I love the game of golf. I've talked about it for many years now. I think growing the game gets thrown around too much. I like to say give back to the game for everything it's given me. And for me, I want to see this sport get healthier. And one reality is the more we can bring this to minorities, where they can get themselves involved in a game of golf, see why it's so special, the relationships you can have, the connections you can have, what it can do for your life in a personal aspect and in a business aspect, professional aspect. I want to bring more to it. And the reality is these guys have a better opportunity of connecting with someone who looks more like them than they do like me.
Billy, our buddies at Fried Egg Golf, where they're covering the event at concession, they said they talked to players who are struggling with credit card debt, and they use whatever winnings they can to pay off bills. Some guys have second and third jobs. How difficult is it for the players that are competing out there this week?
Yeah, for them and for any guy playing in the developmental tour, it is a struggle. It's not cheap by any means to try and chase a dream of making it professionally on the Korn Ferry Tour, the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour. It takes a lot of money. And so, you know, a lot of them around the country, just not the APGA Tour guys, are in some financial debt. And so any opportunity they can have to play for some significant amount of money. This week with Cisco, we're playing for $150,000. Winner gets a $50,000 check. That goes a long way to paying off some of this debt, but also being able to reinvest in themselves into the game of golf, because they need to be able to get better. They need to spend more time with the teachers, trainers, sports psychologists, anybody who can help them achieve a dream. They need to have the financial resources to do that.
Let's talk about you and your health, Billy. You had surgery earlier this year. This is your third start back. You've been globetrotting. We've seen you in Japan. We've seen you at Wentworth BMW Championship. It's the first time we're seeing you in the United States right now. How is your health?
Yeah, we're good. The hip is healthy. The game is still a little bit work in progress. There's some good signs of it, but ultimately the hip still needs to get a little bit stronger, still needs to get a little bit more explosive. I feel a lot better with some of that compared to where I was at Wentworth. But, you know, this time coming back was more or less just getting back into the game of golf, playing golf, getting comfortable with the feels of my hip. I have more range of motion now, so there's some things dynamically and biomechanically that we're going to look at after this week to understand why things are a little bit different in the swing, and to sort of have a better plan for the rest of this year, so we're set to go in 26. But health-wise, I feel really good. There's no issues with the hip, and now it's just getting the reps and getting a little bit more consistent on a day-to-day basis.
Billy, you don't strike me as someone who would enjoy having 4 or 5 months off, having to rehab, sit around. You don't like to sit still, from what I know about you. How did you occupy your time while you were on the mend and trying to come back?
Damon, I think you are right in that assessment, and I would have said that a couple years ago. But listen, I've seen what the life on the other side is, and it's pretty darn good. Being able to spend time with my family, being able to go to more sporting events with my kids, see them play their sports, being able to go fishing with my dad and my uncle and my son, just being able to do stuff that I haven't been able to do over my 16 years as a professional golfer, or didn't make time for, because this is obviously such a time-consuming sport, and this is what I want to do and be successful in life, or be successful in the game of golf. But you know, there was a lot of time to enjoy the hard work over the last 16 years, over the last few months, and I'm ready to get back to playing some golf. But I do miss being at some of my kids' practices and their sporting games, and I look forward to doing more of that in the years to come.
You did actually get to watch the Ryder Cup, presumably from home. Billy, you've been known to fire up the crowds in your time. I watched you at that Walker Cup at Royal County Down almost 20 years ago. At this point, what did you make of what you saw at Bethpage, both in terms of the performance of either team and of what we saw from the fans?
Yeah, I actually went Saturday morning. I know I've been to a Ryder Cup, and I was in New York doing some corporate obligations, and took the opportunity to go out Saturday morning. And it was an amazing atmosphere, but it was what I expected it to unfortunately turn out to be. I expected the New York fans to bring their support, but I also expected them to cross the line. And I had talked about it for months, and even, you know, a couple of years leading up to it, about how it could have got out of control, and it did exactly what I thought. And it's unfortunate, because it's such a great competition. You know, Europe played unbelievably well, and what America did the final day was truly impressive. To be able to have a chance to possibly hold the cup at the end of the day. But too much of what came after the Ryder Cup, of talking about the crowds and the way they, you know, their behavior was just unfortunate, because it should have been talked about the competition itself.
Well, Billy, let's talk about the competition, because it seems like that the Europeans always are a step ahead, one chess move ahead, whether it's a captain bringing the team over early, using the VR headsets, saying the right thing, putting the right guys together. Not that the Americans don't do things right, but it just seems like, from my perspective, the Europeans are that much quicker, that much faster. Is that your perspective as well, that the Europeans, for whatever reason, just do things a little bit tighter and more soundly?
Yeah, it is. And I had some conversations with some people, some other players, some players that are bigger names, and You know, I've been part of Ryder Cups after this Ryder Cup. And the thing that I shared with them is that over the last 5 or 6 years being on the European Tour, understanding that the European Tour runs their Ryder Cup. So they see these people, they know the backroom staff, they can have conversations when they're over there playing about the Ryder Cup, even if it's a couple years in advance, about hotels or anything that, you know, comes across their mind about how to make things better. They have that ability to talk to these people that they have a relationship with on a regular basis. And in my opinion, we don't have that with the PGA America. They do come around and they do a great job. I'm not gonna say they don't do a good job, but I believe that it's time that the PGA Tour or people that we believe should take over the Team USA. They should run Team USA. The PGA America can still run the Ryder Cup. They can still sell all the corporate stuff. But I think we need to take more ownership of our team and have people there who work on that Ryder Cup on a yearly basis and are out at our tournaments that we can have a relationship with and talk through things about so we don't miss things and things don't slip through the cracks.
Is that one of the pieces of advice you'd give to the new PGA Tour CEO, Brian Rolapp, if you run into him in the grocery store down there in Pontevedra? Billy, have you actually spent any time with Rolapp yet?
Yeah, I had a meeting with Rolapp in early August. Impressed by Brian. Obviously, Arthur Blank's a really good friend of mine, and he's known Brian for 20 plus years, and Arthur speaks very highly of him. Brian comes with a fresh perspective from the game of golf. He sees things differently. Obviously, he's not a golfer naturally, so he's going to bring a different perspective to the PGA Tour, which I think is needed. And not that we haven't had some of this perspective before, but we're in a period of time where change is can happen. Players are willing to change now where, you know, a handful of years ago, players didn't feel like we needed to change. We didn't need to evolve. They felt like everything we did on the PGA Tour was status quo and was good. But we always need to continue to evolve. If you're not evolving, if you're not always trying to get better, then you're going down the hill while everyone is passing you going up. So I think Brian's going to do some really great things. I think there's going to be change to the PGA Tour that we all have to get behind and change our thinking on. And everybody's going to be affected by this at some point in time. But I do believe the change that will come, whatever is to come, I think will be for the best of the PGA Tour and will set up for the PGA Tour for success for the decades to come as we've had 60 plus years of successful PGA Tour over the last 60 years.
Billy, you're always gracious with your time. Continued good health. Have a great week in Utah. Thank you.